Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you on board here at the Chateau. Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 at 15, Hummel's Wharf. That allows us to broadcast from the Chateau. And also, the Hilshers General Store hotline open at 1-800-795-9565, powered by Hilshers General Store. Go to www.hilshersstore.com. Located 7 miles south of Seals Grove, Routes 11 and 15. Mark Brennan, it has been a long time, my friend. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, it's great to be back with you, Steve. Things a little bit calmer now than they were during the season and stuff, so look forward to kicking it around a little bit with you.
Yeah, let's. I want to start with football, then we'll get to the basketball part of
sure.
it. Because we just had Aaron Carter on, and we went through Aaron's ever-in-flux tournament bracket, in which he had 78 different teams winning it.
Nice.
No, he's,
that's one less than me.
Aaron said, now, right now, I thought that was an interesting way to start. Let's get to the football part of it. Bill O'Brien, I think, made the point emphatically that 8-4, not good enough. To hear that attitude off the top, what does that tell you?
Well, you know, number one, I didn't really expect anything else. I'm sure you didn't either. Just knowing
nope.
Bill and getting to know the guys on the staff, that that's the one thing, Steve, that I really, you know, that I think is going to carry this program through. That they're not sitting here saying, woe is me. And Bill said that. I mean, they're not saying, listen, have a pity party for Penn State. They're going out there and fighting when it comes to recruiting. They're going to keep being creative offensively. Anybody who's gotten to know John Butler at all knows the sort of intensity that he brings to mm-hmm. defense. So it's, to me, you know, maybe that's surprising to some people, but I think people like you and others who have kind of been around these guys, no surprise at all, and I think they need that attitude to carry through this period of sanctions.
I think you'll find that coaches that make a lot of excuses are ones that I think start heading down a bad road. And we've been around that. We've seen
yep.
that before.
Yep.
When you're around coaches that project confidence, it projects confidence also to families that recruit, and you talk to families when they're being recruited. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, it's not, you know, the elephant in the room here is that these guys on the team now could still leave. And
sure.
So if, number one, if you're not projecting it to them, why would they ever want to stay? Now, having said that, you know, I think the proof was in the pudding last year that these guys, even after an 0-2 start, they weren't backing down or backing away from everything, from anything. And that's why I think so many guys ultimately ended up staying and will end up staying. I'll be shocked if they lose any major players between now and the start of the season.
Yeah, great.
And then I think that carries over into recruiting, where recruits come on campus and they get the vibe from the players. Yeah, we did something on a kid who was here earlier this week, Marcus Allen, a defensive back from Maryland. One of the things he told our reporter was that, you know, it opened his eyes, kind of the positive vibe and positive energy. You know, people hear about the scandal, and, you know, that's all a lot of people think about who are on the outside. But once they get here, they realize that these guys are full steam ahead. And it does, you know what, it's not just Bill O'Brien. And again, Steve, you know this. I mean, it's the assistant coaches, it's Fitz. It's everybody who has that attitude, and if they didn't have that attitude, they would be in real trouble.
There is a reality that I think a lot of fans may not realize. Your best recruiters are your players.
Yep. And especially now. Because,
right.
as I said, these guys, and again, I'm not projecting anything. My guess is that the vast majority of these guys are going to stay, all the important guys, because they've already bought into it to this point.
And they've lived through the practical application of it.
Right. So if you're a recruit coming on campus, who is going to give you a better feel for things than these guys. Now, of course, you know, the coaching staff has to make their pitch and do their sort of thing.
Sure.
But players have always been key, especially at Penn State. They have always been key to the recruiting process. But I think it even steps up a notch, as you note, simply because, you know, these guys were all in a position where they could have left and still could leave, and they're staying. And there's something to be said for that. And listen, we're not talking about crappy players here. You know, we're talking about all Big Ten level players. We're talking about, you know, guys. There are guys on this team who have, to me, there's no question. You know, Donovan Smith, Adrian Amos, you know, Kyle Carter, Jesse James. There are guys on this team that barring injury, are going to go on to significant NFL careers. So we're just not talking about, you know, kind of throwaway players. We're talking about legit, big-time, Big Ten athletes.
Allen Robinson, another guy.
I'll go back to what Joe always said. You start mentioning names and you're going to leave somebody out.
Exactly.
So I'm glad you're there to help me out with that.
Now, when you look at this spring for them, the quarterback is an obvious thing.
Yep. Right?
So we know that. So now let's go someplace else. What's another area where, if they can shore it up, and especially depth-wise shore it up, could be a big help in this football team if they can shore it up?
Listen, I think they're going to be fine at their other skill positions. But I don't think that is going to be an issue offensively. But the two spots that would jump out to me right now would be offensive line. Because, you know, I think there's something to be said for having to replace your center, kind of the play caller up there in Matt Stankavich. And I have no doubt that Ty Howell or whoever ends up winning the job, I think it'll be Ty Howell, will be able to get it done. And I think they have enough good athletes, but it's just one of those things where kind of bringing everything, that cohesion that they talk about, and getting a new center out there, you know, you lose an all Big Ten center, there's something to be said for that. And then, you know, defensive line, I know people are a little bit worried about losing Jordan Hill, but I look at the amount of talent on that D-line, and, you know, there could be some depth issues, but I think they're going to be just fine there. To me, linebacker, you know, you don't lose a Mike Motti and a Gerald Hodges without expecting some sort of transition. Now, I think they have the guys there to get it done. Mike Hull, obviously, you know, he showed us last year that when he was on the field, he was not just out there doing stuff. I mean, he was a playmaker. He was blocking kicks. He was returning fumbles for touchdowns. He was out there getting it done. And everything we hear about Naeem Wortman is that he's the kind of player who can play at this level as well. So I think, you know, they have the talent there, but you're asking guys to step in to replace a Motti and a Hodges, you know, two NFL guys when they're healthy. So I think that's one area to watch. And listen, you talk about the secondary. They lose Stephon Morris. To me, that's kind of an ever-evolving, maybe that's not the right way of putting it, but I just think they have to keep building depth in that secondary. It obviously wasn't anywhere where it needed to be. They get the two Smiths in there, the early enrollee kids, Jordan Anthony Smith. I think that will help, but I still don't think they're where they need to be depth-wise in that secondary. So I know that's a long answer to your question, but offensive line and linebacker are two areas that I'll be looking at this spring.
Penn State basketball, a quick transition there, and then we'll go to the NCAA tournament. Your thoughts on a roster that is going to turn over and will have, when you include a Tim Frazier and a John Johnson, essentially the team will be new next year. I mean, six new faces.
Yeah, I know. I was listening to you with Dick Girardi. I forget which road game it was, Minnesota maybe, and Dick talking about how, you know, the real, not only possibility, but probably likelihood that this is going to be a four-guard kind of attack. And I think that's just going to be a lot of fun. You know, the key is, you know, obviously you've watched enough Big Ten basketball and state basketball to know that if you don't at least have functional big men, you're going to struggle. And we saw that this year. When Sasha finally picked up his game, they were competitive in nearly every outing down the stretch. So I think one of the real keys next year is going to be for somebody to step up. And even if it's a Ross Travis, you know, I hate to even invoke the name because I know he's been in trouble, but I look back at that 2001 team. And one of the real pivotal guys that season to me was Jozy Klein.
No question.
He stepped up his game. He was the one guy who elevated. You knew what you were getting in Joe Crispin. You knew what you were getting in Titus Ivory. And you knew what you were getting
Tyler Smith and John Crispin and Brandon Watkins, yeah.
Right, and even the guys off the bench from that team, Marcus Banta, I mean, those kind of guys. You kind of knew what you were going to get. Jozy was the one guy who really stepped up his game and, you know, gave them that inside presence that they lost with Jarrett Stevens the previous year. And I really think Ross Travis, you know, we've seen that you don't have to be 6'10". You don't have to be 6'11". If you have good enough guards, you know, I think they could put a pretty significant starting five out there. But then the question becomes depth. And how much, you know, I just wonder if John Graham's ever going to kind of make it at this level. Mm-hmm. I hate to be critical of kids, but he's been in the program for a while, and I don't know if it's a mental thing there with him in terms of just, you know, not getting it when he's out there on the court or what, but he just doesn't look comfortable.
John's still mechanical when he plays.
Yeah, and I just, you wonder if he hasn't gotten it by this point, if he is ever going to get it. And I hope he does. I hope I'm wrong on that.
Right,
I mean,
because he's a great kid.
I don't want to come across as being negative toward him. Right. But I think if you look at it practically and realistically, I don't know that you can count on him being, you know, a 25-minute-a-game type big man. So, to me, you have those four guards, and they're bringing some other good guards in. They're going to be fine guard-wise. The big kid from Philly, I'm anxious to see how he does, but he's skinny. So, you know, Travis is key, but then depth in the paint is going to be a big thing for them.
NCAA tournament, quickly, what do you see going into what may be the most wide-open tournament we've ever seen?
Yeah, the funny thing, you know, what I learned my lesson on picking brackets, Steve, and you know what I do anymore now? I go in and I try to pick it as quickly as possible. I don't sit there and think about anything.
Yeah, don't overanalyze the bracket. Yeah.
I picked mine in 5 minutes and 12 seconds. And you know why? Because I've learned that you sit there and grind over these games. So I don't know. I don't know that I have any great analysis for you.
Nobody does.
It doesn't look like the Big Ten. As strong as the Big Ten is, to me, it didn't look like they got a whole lot of favors in the way things, the way teams were kind of slotted. Somebody runs, you know, Indiana, you would think, has a shot at getting to that Final Four, but along the way there, everybody kind of runs into somebody. I actually have Ohio State because I think their bracket is the most favorable coming out of the West and going to the Final Four. The rest of my Final Four is Louisville, Florida, Miami, and I'm front-running, I guess, going with Louisville as the team to win it. But I just wonder with the Big Ten teams, I guess there's one of two ways it can go. You know, either they've hardened themselves so much by beating up on each other that they're going to be outstanding, or that they're all going to be so drained from just clobbering each other all season. Because we saw it. I mean, you know, and people, you know, people want to think that it's just the top 6-7 teams in the Big Ten. No. I mean, you go, you know, ask Michigan what it was like coming here to play Penn State. Ask Wisconsin what it was like coming here. And not just wins and losses. I'm talking physically and what it takes out of you. So I really have to wonder if that grinding conference season didn't, you know, it's going to be one of two things. It either took a lot out of the Big Ten, or it's going to have it battle ready, and we'll see how it goes.
I think for Indiana, I'll give one quick example in Indiana. When you play in the conference that is so well scouted, and this may be the best scouted conference I've seen.
Yeah.
That they're going to find in the opening weekend, there are going to be spots on the floor open that have not been open since Christmas.
Well, the Holes kid, I mean, we saw how he struggled late in the year, and maybe that's what he needs, is that everybody doesn't know exactly what he's going to do. The one thing that makes me nervous about Indiana is that backcourt. I mean, I think that backcourt could be terrific.
Yeah.
But I also think that it could be a liability, number one, because they're small, and number two, with Farrell, I mean, he's a young guy, and it's one thing to be playing in games in the regular season, but what's going to happen when the entire season's on the line? You know, maybe he'll prove me wrong and be great, but I have them losing to Miami, I think it is, in that East bracket.
Oh, Miami is a better backcourt.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the Larkin kid, I mean...
That's what I mean.
Everything I've seen of that kid, you know, even when they lost to Duke, I came out of that game thinking, wow, you know, I had not seen that kid that much before. Because you know what it's like. When you're covering the Big Ten, you're focused mostly on the conference.
Sure.
And I was like, wow. And I like teams in the tournament that have that kind of guard with that kind of killer instinct that, you know, I think we saw out of him.
And it's interesting, though. Why has Jim Larrañaga always been a success, whether it was at Bowling Green, George Mason or Miami.
Good guard.
When they asked him about his seating, he said the first thing I looked at was we got a Friday game because they played three games in 3 days.
Ah, right.
That's a guy that sees the big picture and thinks. It didn't matter if he was a one or a two. He knew either way he was going to get it to whatever draw.
Yeah.
But he looked at what gives my team the best shot. An extra day rest is what he felt was more important.
Hey, give Miami credit for going out and getting him. I mean, that guy is obviously one of the top handful of coaches anywhere. I mean, to do what he did at the smaller schools, and now to do it in the ACC, you know, kind of this quickly, that's impressive stuff.
Yeah, first time I ever saw him, Mark, was at Bowling Green. Penn State went in there and Bowling Green beat him, and I thought, this guy can coach.
Well, and the other cool thing about it is he's one of these guys that you can root for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't carry himself like a jerk. You know, almost like Beilein out of Michigan.
You're right.
You know, I know Penn State fans may hate Michigan, but guy just seems like a nice guy.
John is a nice guy. You really, yeah. Anybody talks to him knows it.
And you could, and I think it comes through probably in his players. And he's an easy guy to kind of root for. Whereas, you know, that coach at Indiana, I don't think it's quite as easy to root for. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
I'll tell you, there's not a lot of love across the landscape on that one.
Well, there are certain people that just rub people the wrong way. And, you know, maybe it was getting involved with that Harbaugh family. I don't know. But, Tom Crean, he just, you know, from a media perspective, he always carries a little bit of an arrogance to him when we deal with him.
Yeah, he makes people wait. And that's what, you know, I'm talking like when I mean wait. I'm talking, he doesn't make you wait 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever. He'll make people wait half hour, 45 minutes. I'm sorry, you're not the most important person on the planet. And this is where the NCAA is going to force him to show up at certain things on time to do things. Because he makes people wait. He has thrown TV guys out of the gym, not because they were doing anything, because he just didn't want them there.
Right, and again...
During shoot-around, they're covering the game.
Give the guy credit for what he's done at Indiana, but having said that, you know, I think there are a lot of coaches who could have turned that Indiana program around. It's not that difficult to recruit for the Hoosiers. You know, that's a completely different ball game than doing what Larrañaga has done down at Miami.
Right.
I mean, because Miami just didn't have the hoop tradition like that.
None.
You know, they could... Green is really, and he's a good coach. There's no question about
no
it.
Doubt.
But he definitely rubs certain people, including me, the wrong way.
Mark, as always, thanks, my friend. It's great to have you back on.
It's great to be here. Look forward to coming on again, and probably see you tomorrow watching some hoops somewhere. I look forward to it.
Mark Brennan, Fight On State. Danny and I will come back in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. There is nothing like watching Kevin bop around the newsroom to this. To call it stunning.
Does he have any rhythm whatsoever?
Oh. All I know is right now he's down at Myrtle Beach and we'll just let him live in peace. How about that? Rhythm. I can tell you right now, the Chief and Dick Quarter are sitting there going, no. Well, tomorrow Bucknell plays. They will play tomorrow. And the, I want to say, what, the 12:40 game tomorrow? 12:40
game. That is correct.
Against Butler. This is going to be a very physical game between the two. Butler plays physical basketball. And Bucknell can go head-to-head with anybody when it comes to physicality. I have that game circled. And yes, in my bracket, I have the 11 beating the 6. I have Bucknell into the next round. How about that, boys and girls? I've been big on this team for a long time, even after I saw them play Penn State.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Yesterday, we heard from Cale Sanderson. Tomorrow, we're going to hear from Jeff Byers from Des Moines on the NCAA Wrestling Championships. Then we'll shift gears. Tony Knopp is going to join us from Spotlight Tickets to talk about issues with, I think, the conversation with Tony, I think you're going to find fascinating because of the direction I want to take this thing in. I want to take this in the direction of how important you, the quote average fan, there's no such thing as an average fan, but as opposed to the big money fan, and how important the big money fan considers you, the quote average fan, to be. I mean, it's critical, and it's something that athletic directors, that conference commissioners, that pro sports commissioners and owners need to hear. We'll talk with Tony about that on Friday. Former Phillies and Pirates pitcher Bob Walk joins us on Friday as well from spring training. So that's what we have with the NCAA tournament in gear and finding a big-time gear starting tomorrow at 12:15. Bucknell, 12:40 tomorrow. At Rupp gets Butler. In the pod, Butler is the team closest to home. There'll be no trouble getting tickets. They have 23,000 of them. Great arena. Great arena. I really enjoyed doing game at Rupp. Of course, Penn State won that night, too. They beat Kentucky. But how about Bobby Moe?
I was waiting for you to bring that up.
Bobby Moe. You know, the NIT, which, you know, let's look, the key to, you know what the key in the to winning the NIT is?
Focus.
Getting through the first round. Which school is interested in the opening round game? Who has interest? Interest means something. Bobby Moe had interest, even though they'd won the Northeast Conference and were disappointed at not getting to the NCAAs. And then they had a home game because Rupp's being used for the NCAA, so Kentucky couldn't play at Rupp. Well, John Calipari has made no secret, this is not the favorite team of his lifetime. And what's really interesting is that if you look at the NBA draft rankings, three of those kids are ranked 13, 15, and 20, respectively, on the NBA draft board. Are you kidding me? How weak is the NBA draft this year if that's the case?
It's very weak, but at the same time, he's already got announcements from Poitras and from Archie Goodwin that they're coming back. And I believe it was the number three recruit in the country announced today, Julius Randle, that he will be going to Lexington. So as poor as last night went for Kentucky, they're having a pretty darn good day today.
But let's go back to last year. Teague, Kid Gilchrist, Davis. So much made of those three freshmen, correct?
Yes, indeed.
But when you look at that Kentucky basketball team, which had those three very talented freshmen, without question, what everyone forgets about that team is they forget about Lamb, they forget about Terrence Jones, and they forget about Darius Miller.
The final name you mentioned is probably the most important one, in my opinion.
And who was, and what makes Darius Miller distinct? A senior. A senior who had been through it. A senior who got it. A senior that could lead. An older player the others could look up to. This team at Kentucky did not have that player. They did not have a Darius Miller. And Lamb was a little bit older, too. Didn't have him. Didn't have Terrence Jones. That's what they did not have on this team this year. It was the inmates, the youth, running the asylum. Last year, while everyone talked about all the freshmen at Kentucky, and justifiably so, they were great, Anthony Davis, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Marcus Teague, while they talked about them, they had leadership on the team from older players, in particular Miller. And to some extent, Lamb and Jones. This team did not have that. Thus, they were rudderless unless it came from the coaching staff. And it is very difficult for the coaching staff to be the players' leaders. It's so much easier when you can coach, be the leader as a coach, and then look to your leadership to then message part.
I have all valid points. I completely agree. And another thing that, you know, Coach Cal wasn't used to this year is the fact that he didn't have a steady point guard. I mean, you look throughout his success. I mean, the top five draft picks the past years, Rose, Tyreek Evans, Teague, John Wall. He's always had a set point guard. And then coming into this year, he didn't really have that. Julius Mays is not his, you know, stereotypical point guard. Ryan Harrow was injured and inconsistent, and that just ruined the whole flow of their offense.
No question. And then they went 4-6 after the loss of Nerlens Noel. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure even with Nerlens Noel they get in. There's some that say that he could have been the first overall pick in the draft. Well, offensively, he can't get it done. Now, defensively, he's excellent. Good rebounder, great shot blocker. But offensively, really?
NBA draft drafts on potential. So even if he decides to declare now, I would not be shocked to see him go top three.
Well, here's something interesting to file away, though. NBA clubs own D-League teams. You realize the D-Leagues? I mean, the D-League actually makes money. And there is some talk now of increasing D-League salaries. And by in the process of increasing D-League salaries, you may have players bypassing college basketball to go and play in the D-League for a year and then go to the NBA. How about that?
That's treading into some murky waters if they do that. I mean, I guess it's the equivalent of what Brandon Jennings did a few years ago when he went and played in Europe for a year before coming back to the States. But it wouldn't surprise me. It might happen. It's kind of like having like a minor league, like your AAA baseball team, and having prospects that'll come up to the big leagues.
Exactly. It's exactly what it is. I'm just throwing it out just so you're aware that conversations such as those do take place. Interesting. Something else that's interesting, Adam Rittenberg's been writing about this on his ESPN blog, and I can tell you there's validity to it, but they're talking about an east-west split between in the Big Ten. And it would put Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State, Rutgers, Maryland, and then the discussion has been between Indiana, Purdue as to which one is the seventh to come east. In all likelihood, it's going to be Indiana. They put Purdue out west with Northwestern, Illinois, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Nebraska. There's also the story in the Washington Post about travel subsidies for Maryland. I can help you out with that without giving them any travel subsidies right away. Now, part of it is Maryland is financially behind in its athletic department, and they are facing, of course, this $52 million exit fee from the ACC, which is now in the hands of the courts. But I think if they want to save money in an expanded Big Ten, you have division play in football. Do division play in all your other sports. Do divisional play in men's soccer, women's soccer. Do divisional play in baseball. Do divisional play in softball. Will you play everybody on your side? In other words, keep everything as close to the neighborhood as possible. Then move on to a conference tournament from there. You know, maybe have a crossover so you're keeping contact with the other side. But if you want to save money, split the conference into divisions across the board on almost every sport.
Do you want basketball to be one of those sports or no?
No. Well, basketball, you may have to do divisional play, Danny, but you play everybody. Big difference. If you keep it at 14, you can play 19 conference games, which is one more than you play now, where you would play everybody on your side, home and away, 12, and then each one of the seven schools on the other side in one place. And you can get to 19 conference games. So, yes, I would do that. So you have to come up with a formula to do it. I would do that. But when I'm talking about divisional play for softball, baseball, men's and women's soccer, field hockey, whatever. When I'm talking about divisional play in that, I'm talking about just staying in your neighborhood and playing that side and maybe a crossover game to the other side just to keep contact and then get to a conference tournament. Basketball's different. You have to play everybody. You can't keep somebody out. And if Indiana and Purdue end up in a situation where one's in one division and the other one, allow a non-conference game against each other. So you still maintain a home and away. And you designate which date that non-conference game is, so it doesn't go into the conference race. See, I was up thinking last night.
You got the Big Ten all planned out.
Well, I mean, but it saves money, Danny. It saves money. I mean, if you're, let's just take your men's soccer team. Does your men's soccer team need to travel to Iowa? I mean, do they need to do that? Or does your men's soccer team get on a bus and go to Rutgers, get on a bus and go to Maryland, get on a bus and go to Ohio State? Okay, get on a bus and go to Michigan State. Double up in the weekend. Yeah, take a weekend. Men's soccer team goes to Rutgers. Next stop, Maryland. Next weekend, go to Ohio State, then go to Indiana. Or go to Indiana first, then come back to Ohio State and keep coming back. Go up to Michigan State. What's wrong with that idea? Just cut down on travel. Yeah, and then if you want to play a crossover to keep contact with the other side, I mean, just to have a trip, okay. I'm fine with that, but, this is called saving money. Now, do I want to save money when it comes to men's basketball? Of course not. It's making money. Football and men's basketball are the two reasons you stay afloat. Simple as that. Now, you don't go wild and crazy and let them do whatever they want, but you still have, I mean, with 14 schools, you can't play a double round robin. You just can't do that. Because now you're talking about 26 games. You can't do that. So you can't play everybody home and away. Right now you have 4-1 plays. This would, with adding two schools, now you're talking about having 7-1 plays. But at least every other year you've got, in a 2-year span, you've played everybody home and away. In a 4-year span, you played everybody home and away twice. Now, you'd have to figure out how you do the conference tournament. Okay, I understand that, but that is another work in progress. But if you're going to keep it at 14, you do that. Now, if they expand to 16 and then they go down the coast like some people have suggested, again, I go back to your Olympic sports, a.k.a. non-revenue sports, and you division those sports. And you may want to think about doing 4 divisions. And have the 4 division winners then meet in a conference tournament, semifinals and finals. You might want to do that. 4 schools in each. But the idea is to regionalize the travel in the conference. And for football, if they're going to do this east-west split, let's face it, let's go from a Penn State point of view. Penn State fans can now drive to New Jersey, the High Point Stadium, and see Rutgers. Penn State fans can drive to Byrd Stadium, see Maryland. They can drive to Ohio Stadium and see Ohio State. Now you start to stretch out the mileage a little bit, but, you know, you're going to Michigan, Michigan State, still in a drivable realm from State College. Now you're talking about the eastern part of the state. You're tacking out a couple of extra hours of driving. But you're also talking about a schedule that every year would have Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, Maryland. Every year. And they'll go to nine. They will go to nine conference games. I don't think 10's going to win. Nine, I think, is going to be the winner. Which still then gives you scheduling flexibility for the other three games. Every other year, your three non-conference games have to be at home because you'll have four Big Ten games at home and five road games. Then the year you have five home games, you can play two at home and one on the road. So you can still go out and, as an example, schedule an Alabama. You just have to schedule them in such a way where the year you have four Big Ten home games, you have all three of your non-conference games, including that Alabama game at home. On the year that you have five conference home games, you can have two others at home, and you can play that road game at Alabama. Because as long as it gets you to seven, seven's the magic number. But when it comes to, quote, the other sports, outside of men's, now women's basketball, you have to do the same thing. Although women's basketball has different rules, for example. I mean, you know, women's basketball in the Big Ten, they only play 16 games in the conference. They got one plays all over the place. Men play 18. Under what I'm saying is you just add one game to 19, but you increase your one plays from four to seven. Because you're playing home and away with your divisional rivals. I also, the other thing I would do is that last game of the football season, I would make that the last game of the season in basketball, too.
Create more of a rivalry.
Sure. I'd do the same thing. I would have Indiana-Purdue be the last game of the football season for the old Oaken Bucket. I'd have them be the last game of the basketball season, too, in the regular season. Michigan-Ohio State, last game football, last game basketball. Now, who would you put Penn State up against? Well, it used to be Michigan State, but you know what? Maybe it's Maryland. And then make that the last basketball game of the season, too. In fact, if I have my preference, okay, and this is one I don't, but I would request Maryland as my ACC game next season. Start the rivalry early. Come back to wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on Pre-Auction Blowout. With so many great deals in bloom, you'll be thinking spring. Like a 2004 Volvo XC40 four-door twin-turbo with four-wheel drive. Lowest price promise, $9,994. A 2006 BMW X3 four-door four-wheel drive, $14,299. 2008 Ford Escape four-wheel drive V6 limited, only $15,988. 2012 Hyundai Elantra four-door sedan GLS, just $15,943. A 2012 Hyundai Veloster three-door coupe with black interior. Call for a price, 888-536-8017. All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout. 24/7 at sunburymotors.com, at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
ESPN's reached a deal with the Mountain West Conference, which is, that's great for the Mountain West. They've been on CBS Sportsnet, which has worked well. I mean, it's nice having your own outlet, and I think that that outlet's growing in popularity as time goes along. But still, the ESPN brand is great, and they're going to have select college football and basketball games through the 2020 season, 2020 basketball season, the 1920 season. And Boise State certainly is a part of that. Three Boise State home games nationally will be broadcast at minimum. And 31 conference control games will air on either ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, ESPN News, or ESPN3. Going on ESPN3 is no treat. That's not exactly what you call exposure. That's on your computer. But still, it's better than what they had in terms of exposure. So the tournament rolls on tonight. LaSalle plays this evening. They'll take on Boise State.
And you're going LaSalle?
Yeah, I'm going LaSalle tonight. I think they can shoot their way past. It's, you know, Galloway did not, when they lost in the Atlantic 10 tournament, and Dick was there, he went from the Big Ten tournament over to Barclays. Galloway couldn't shoot the ball worth a darn. Just could not get on track. He's the South Carolina transfer that's can be really explosive. Tyree Dern is really good. Wright did not play well against Penn State, but he's played really well in the Atlantic 10. And he played well in the conference tournament, too. But Galloway is the pivotal guy that swings it their way. If he gets going early tonight, Danny, it's a good night for LaSalle. They'll advance.
Yeah, I agree. They got to be wary of Boise State, though, in their own three-point shooting, because Boise's one of the better teams in the country at shooting the three. They got a couple of guys in the mid-40s, a couple of guys in the high 30s. They can really shoot the three.
Perimeter defense at a premium tonight. I think that'll be a fun game to watch. That game will be in the 70s tonight.
I think
75 is the winning number of the game. First team to 75 wins. Hey, Danny, great job. Appreciate it.
Glad to be here and glad to give you a break from Kevin.
What? That last part certainly rings true.